Welcome back to Salty Talks, where we explore aquaculture innovation and the science that sustains it. I'm your host, Corinne Newfie, and today we are taking a deep dive into the Aquaculture Research Institute's multifaceted approach to sustainable aquaculture. I'm recording down in San Antonio at the World Aquaculture Society Conference, showcasing ARI's commitment to interdisciplinary research and its vital role in advancing the industry through the synergy of science, sustainability, and education in aquaculture. So let's meet our panel of experts today, each bringing a unique perspective to the table.
Hi, I'm Sarah Turner. I'm a research specialist with the Aquatic Animal Health Lab in Cooperative Extension in the Aquaculture Research Institute, and I'm also a PhD candidate defending in like 2 weeks. Well, I have a lot of experience in aquatic animal health as far as like disease goes, but also my PhD is on developing novel adjuvants for vaccine systems using sustainable biopolymers.
I'm Matt Hockyard. I'm an assistant extension professor and fin fish nutrition specialist. I have a joint appointment with University of Maine Cooperative Extension and with the Aquaculture Research Institute. I think that's the best I've ever actually said that. My research is largely based in fish nutrition. I work in early life history of marine fish. So how do we better deliver nutrients to the smallest and kind of most vulnerable of these finfish species? Secondly, I work in like alternative feeds. How do we look at challenges like replacing fish meal and fish oil with more sustainable alternatives?
Hi everybody, yeah, I'm Bobby Moorfield, and I have been working with ARI for quite a few years. I am currently now a postdoctoral fellow. It's the first time I've said that publicly. working in Heather Hamlin's lab, and for my doctoral research, I worked on sea lice and looking at the biology and ecology of sea lice in order to further different aspects of mitigation. Currently, I'm working on broodstock, so I've either moved up or down the food chain. I'm not really sure what I've decided yet, but I'm working on salmon, so I'm looking at the embryology and broodstocks and their different aspects of variabilities and really this early stage of domestication. And so was there another part of that question? Did I get it all?
You got it all.
All right.
So again, I'm Debbie, and other than being the director of the Aquaculture Research Institute, I'm also an aquatic animal health specialist. I've been working with the industry in disease diagnosis, research, contract research, working with pharmaceutical companies to develop aquatic animal health therapeutics and treatments. I work with Sarah, and that's what we do.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nathan Smith. I'm a PhD candidate in the Ecology and Environmental Sciences Department at UMaine. I work with ARI pretty squarely in the human dimensions of recirculating aquaculture system development in Maine and throughout the United States, using mixed methods approaches, qualitative, quantitative, and spatial approaches to advise site selection.
I'm Scarlett Tudor. I'm an education and outreach coordinator, both for Cooperative Extension 4-H and the Aquaculture Research Institute. I'm a first-generation student. I'm actually from Appalachia, and I'm a 4-H alumni that took my fish to the state fair. So these are sort of where my interests go. My position, I really work in education, and I work with a spectrum of people. I really work with kids from 6 years old all the way up to people wanting to make a career change. I have a group of women that I work with that I love working with, and that we really are able to look at the diversity of what aquaculture is and engage people in that, whether it's skill sets development for the industry or just simply seafood education so that people understand where our seafood is coming from, the sustainability of that. In addition, I'm also sort of an oddball up here. I'm an animal behaviorist, so my PhD is in reproductive signals, but I do some research with Heather Hamlin looking at contaminants and how contaminants influence fish reproduction. And again, that research program that we run is really to engage undergraduate students to make research accessible. And we are working in a whole bunch of diverse communities. We work with immigrant communities in Maine. We have micro-credentials that we offer that will be online and accessible to anyone by the end of the year. And we have these micro-credentials from the University of Maine that, again, are for youth to create these seamless pathways for all types of people to engage with the industry, again, whether that's consumer education or skill sets development.
ARI's strength lies in its interdisciplinary nature, where diverse fields converge to address the complex challenges of aquaculture. This collaboration not only accelerates innovation, but also ensures our research directly benefits the industry, helping to solve real-world problems and fostering a sustainable future for the aquaculture sector.
I'd like to just define multidisciplinary versus interdisciplinary. So ARI has affiliates that we consider are multidisciplinary, I mean, across many different educational realms. But interdisciplinary means that we take their skills and our skills and come and work together and then address the industry and try to move that needle towards, you know, helping them solve problems.
So raise your hand if you're an expert of all things in aquaculture. Okay, for those of you listening at home on the podcast, everyone in the room raised their hand. No, of course not. None of us are experts in all things aquaculture. And so interdisciplinary work is extremely important. And this work with industry is essential because as a researcher, I'm never going to have the impact on society that I really think needs to happen, right? We need to feed people 500 years into the future, right? I mean, certainly, like, I love the speaker this morning. Seven generations is how she's thinking about feeding people. And we all need to think about this, like, in terms of seven generations. And that's a challenge I try to bring to my work. I'm not going to be able to feed seven generations of people. It's going to be industry that feeds seven generations of people. So we have to address their problems and do it in a meaningful way so we can actually move this needle.
And so I would even add to that, I think there's a real importance, sort of like we heard from the plenary speaker today, listening to tribal nations and industry and using Western science all together, I think will allow us to create more sustainable solutions in our industry in all of its sectors.
My PhD research is an interdisciplinary project collaborating with biomedical engineers. You know, in many different disciplines, we've reached a point in just knowledge where we're very siloed, and coming together, combining our skill sets and our knowledge in a synergistic way can really help advance that growth and industry and research in a big and impactful way.
Throughout this panel, the word sustainability kept weaving its way into many answers, underscoring its importance in ARI's approach. Sustainability is a core value that runs through all of our research endeavors, from developing alternative feeds to exploring disease mitigation strategies. Our work is guided by maintaining ecological balance and ensuring the long-term viability of aquaculture practices. And this extends beyond the environmental aspects to encompass social dimensions as well. This holistic approach to sustainability includes environmental, economic, and social pillars and is crucial for the industry's future.
One of our sort of goals is to just track and document those risk perceptions and even the benefit perceptions associated with RASC, so creating sort of a typology of what people think will happen versus what actually happens. So we work to sort of iron this out, and I think that's really critical because there's evolving risks, there's adjacent issues like fisheries that come into play for RASC, and so for us, it's just sort of keeping track of all of that stuff that's really important. So we kind of inform what people think about all those things.
Yeah, a little more in the weeds on that. The work I did regarding sea lice and salmon lice, trying to move away from a reactionary response to this pest, using pesticides and things like that, and move more towards sustainable ways to slow down reproduction and do it in a non-toxic, you know, healthy way for the environment. Developing integrated pest management systems that are more akin to the framework used by terrestrial agriculture, I think, is a way to develop not only our high-value salmon aquaculture, but to give a framework for, you know, other countries and other places for maybe less value products to develop other methodologies that are more sustainable. So not only within our framework and our little silo of our species that we're working on, but to really develop it for, you know, generations. As at this stage of aquaculture, in its almost infancy in a way, I think that's really important.
So one of the new programs that we have at ARI is called the Aqueous Program. This program is really designed to create internship or fellowship-like opportunities for students that take Western science and indigenous knowledge and start to co-create research objectives and questions that we're trying to address. And again, I think really when we're talking about sustainability, if we do not have indigenous peoples at the table with an actual voice that we listen to, we're not going to get anywhere. And I think the reality is, even, you know, we kind of saw this morning, the importance of oral history, and that scientists haven't been measuring and documenting things as long as indigenous peoples have evolved in these landscapes that we now call home or Maine or all the places that we live. And so this program, I think, has been really valuable. I mean, I do believe there are places where the industry can benefit, Western science can benefit, and that we can also start doing a better job at conserving environments. I mean, just as like a factoid, how much of our biodiversity do you think sits on indigenous controlled lands? So think about your state and where's the reservations and how small are they? 80% of our current biodiversity sits in the hands of indigenous peoples, and they are the ones preserving it. So again, I think that really highlights the importance. As Western scientists, we have to come out of our comfort zone a little bit and think about how broadly how we do research and what that information means.
I love sitting at this table because we all have very different kind of research niches, and all these tools are necessary to get to a more, you know, sustainable industry in the long run, which is really our goal. So the kit two that we work on in the nutrition department, one is, I already mentioned, you know, this need to replace fish meal and fish oil. It's not really a replacement. It's really doing as much as we can with what we have, right? I mean, the reality is that fish meals, they don't predict that's going to disappear in our lifetimes. What's happening is it's just not growing. It hasn't grown in quite a while. They project it basically is going to be flatline for decades to come, and that's assuming we have pretty well-managed fisheries. But, you know, aquaculture has been the most rapid food-growing industry, over the last few decades. You can really see it now produces about half of the seafood that on Earth that people are eating. And that growth has been ridden on the backs of fish, on the backs, I don't know, sorry, maybe.
Terrible.
Term, but it has been on the fins, on the dorsal of this fish meal production. And so really to continue to expand, to be able to move from, you know, when my dad was born, there were, I think, 2 billion people on the planet. We just broke 8 billion people a couple of years ago. We're probably going to hit 9, you know, that's where people are thinking. And also we have raising quality of lives. That's what should be a goal of society. So how do we get there, and how do we do that with this limited resource? So to do that, we really need to look at all different, you know, ingredients that we can use in fish feeds to continue to have a fed fish industry. And people mostly eat fish. I'm sorry, I love shellfish, but really American consumers are mostly finfish eaters. And then secondly, I just wanted to hit, I do a lot of early life history thing. And a lot of that revolves around marine finfish eat artemia. They're reliant on things like rotifers and artemia in their early life stages. The Great Salt Lake's disappearing, folks. It's going away. Look at the last 5 years of fishery of wild captured artemia cysts. It really has gone down, and it's getting pretty scary, actually. So for the marine finfish industry to continue to exist and evolve, we're really going to have to look at things that don't rely on at least artemia. There may be other live feeds that we can look at. Certainly that's one aspect of early life nutrition, but also microencapsulated diets, better delivery of nutrients, looking at how do we actually make these smallest particles on Earth to feed the smallest vertebrates on Earth.
I, for one, had no idea that sea monkeys were wild caught. I did not know that.
I learned something
amazing.
New, folks.
Okay. I did not know that.
Yeah. Puts a new perspective on that little tank you
it
got.
Does. Absolutely. Yeah. It does. Yeah.
And because we have so many aquatic animal health specialists on today's panel, I really wanted to highlight how our research in disease management, vaccine development, and fish nutrition is paving a way for healthier aquatic populations and ultimately a more resilient aquaculture sector within a changing climate.
When developing a breeding program, you know, your industry focuses on growth, so it's all focused on growth. But energy budgets are malleable, and there's variability in there. And so one of the things that we're working on, we're really just in the infancy of this project, but we're focused on, finished up on two. Before this week, I was like, had a full beard. I was sitting in an environmental chamber hissing at strangers. It was a mess.
We just have to reintroduce him.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. So what I'm looking at there is looking at different lineages of broodstock and their temperature tolerance. So which I think is a really important aspect that is fairly overlooked. So regardless of how we end up rearing fish, incorporating their tolerance to temperature changes, and not just a ramp up of temperature. We think of climate change as the slow growth of when, for a fish, especially in an open ocean system, longer and higher heat waves are a big deal. So a week of super high heat waves where the fish can't sink down low or move to get out of the heat is going to be a big deal. And if we're breeding fish at optimal temperature to get eggs to all become as likely to survive as possible, we're weeding out potentially some of this variability in temperature tolerance. I feel like I've lost the thread of the question, but I could circle back. Yeah.
I think all the things you mentioned are paramount to keeping a sustainable aquaculture industry growing. And one form isn't better than another, whether you're in the open body of water or whether you're in a recirculating aquaculture system. But what you're looking at for the growth efficiency in those animals may be different. With the climate changing, there'll always be new and emerging pathogens. That's the way life works. So I don't think the Aquaculture Research Institute will ever run out of things to do research on. But it would be nice to get a win on occasion.
Just to plug the aquatic animal health side of things, you know, when you look at antibiotic use over the last, 30 years, in salmon and industry, the data comes out of Norway. But, you really see that antibiotic use was really high in the late 80s, early 90s. And it really, there's a major drop in that. And that really is a result of vaccine development. And really we have changed how we think about aquatic animal health in more of a holistic approach, and then plus moving animals around, the CAPS program, this sort of thing. So it's a multi-pronged approach, but really that limited use of antibiotics is, I think, a really important component to having a sustainable industry, and really gives us something to be proud of when we compare ourselves to other areas of agriculture.
Looking forward, as far as vaccines go, with COVID, the research in human and terrestrial mammals has exploded, and keeping aquaculture up to date with that, I think, is going to be important moving forward.
Me?
Yeah.
Did I look like I was going to say something?
You did, but...
Well, let's just see here.
This is the awkward segment.
another project we've got going on that I just think is kind of fun, we're working on lumpfish working with the USDA, National Coldwater Marine Fisheries, Coldwater Aquaculture Center, in Franklin, and so in developing a lumpfish program. And so we're right now working on more of the nutritional side, developing some feeding rates for lumpfish. But the importance of that is that, as Bobby's working on this idea of these ectoparasites really compromising the health of salmon, that's just yet another thing we're doing, is looking at bioremediation, using other cleaner fish to then clean those ectoparasites off the salmon. So I don't know, just hadn't been mentioned, and you looked at me and asked me to say something. So I just thought, everyone loves lumpfish, right? Raise your hand if you love lumpfish.
Okay.
Everyone's hand is up, for real this time.
In addition to sustainability, education emerged as a reoccurring theme across our panel discussion. Through proactive engagement with communities and working with students, we can inform the next generation of aquaculture experts. These educational efforts are pivotal in forging a more inclusive and comprehensive understanding of aquaculture's role in Maine and beyond.
Again, I am really excited about the diversity of educational programs that we have, and that we partner with organizations like youth organizations like 4-H, Future Farmers of America. My colleagues, Melissa Malmsted and Carlos Koki, Melissa's back there, they actually had youth raise amberjack, and then they brought them to the fair, right? And if you think about organizations like 4-H and Future Farmers of America, they're whole reason for being is to teach adults new technologies through their children, right? So we can talk to adults all we want, but sometimes it's very difficult to get people to change their perspectives, to change their minds and attitudes about certain things. So again, I'm very much centered in the importance of teaching youth and engaging youth. I find it very valuable to work with kids. They're very honest and they will tell you, you know, what they want to learn. And I see so much engagement and enthusiasm with kids around fish. I think the other thing that we're doing that is very unique is really a skill sets development mindset. Often academic institutions think about skill sets development as being at a vocational school or community colleges, and that we're intellectuals for whatever that means, right? And so I think for universities to thrive, we have to show people this is why you want to come here, and these are the careers that you can get. And I'm not just going to teach you the theory about fish nutrition, but we're developing courses and opportunities for people to get their hands on pumps, get their hands in water, for them to understand what the job is day to day. And so I think our university is really attacking sort of education issues from a multi-pronged approach, right? So now we're able to capture any audience. Like, you bring me somebody today that you want them to get into the industry, I will tell you one of our programs that would help them in that career path, or a colleague's program that will get them into that career path.
Yeah, I think at ARI, sort of what I do and what my advisor do kind of plug directly into that. We're hoping to bring the social science toolkit to this to inform strategies for education, using empirical, using surveys to see, you know, what are these misconceptions? What levers can we pull to better educate people about these? Is there a trust issue? How can we understand that? Where is that? And so we can inform that directly, and that's what we're hoping to do. In fact, I was just up at CCAR the other week talking to Scarlett about that. And that's just a really important thing for us to inform practical strategies.
And I think, again, that's this great interdisciplinary thing, right? Like, I don't know his science, but he can tell me these are the misconceptions and this is how we can address them, while we can also continue collecting data for them to continue understanding how the misconceptions evolve over time.
I think ARI also works really hard at surveying our stakeholders and surveying the industry to set research priorities. And so when the industry tells us we want A, B, and C done first, we then go and find, we always have to find the funding to do the research, and that's what we target. In fact, one of our newest initiatives is building a sustainable aquaculture workforce innovation center on campus that will specialize in recirculating aquaculture systems and actually have workforce development for undergraduates, graduate students, industry innovation, and lifelong learners.
So this is going to go a little bit off to the side, but one of the things that I'm doing in my PhD is collaborating with biomedical engineers. And with that, we have engineering students who had no idea that aquaculture was an industry or that aquaculture faced so many engineering challenges. And so bringing in this whole group of people who have a very different background and different mindset, who are excited about aquaculture and, you know, innovative strategies to facing. And I'm not just talking about systems challenges and pumps and tanks. I'm talking about biomedical challenges. And you look at how far ahead human and even terrestrial mammal biomedical science is, bringing that to aquaculture has been a great education and interdisciplinary.
I just wanted to give a nod to that end of the table, Scarlett, Nathan. We address a lot of research that challenges that are technical challenges that, you know, result in fish health challenges or high mortalities, that sort of thing. But really, you know, when you look at the U.S. aquaculture scene, one of the biggest barriers to expansion of aquaculture in the United States is going to be social license and having people trust that aquaculture is and understand the value of aquaculture. And really, that really starts with educating kids, because adults, we've all made up our minds. We don't change our minds about anything, so we're a lost cause. But kids understand this stuff, and they get it much quicker, and they're going to very quickly step into that next generational role. And also understanding what these barriers are and understanding things, social, you know, limits to social license.
As we've heard from our panelists, there's an array of really great projects and initiatives underway at ARI. From interdisciplinary collaborations that bridge engineering and aquaculture to programs designed to address the educational needs of diverse communities. So I asked our panel to share what they're most excited about.
Okay, I'll say for me, like, I obviously was a fish nerd from when I was a kid, and like, I am just so excited and proud of the programming that we do that gives mentorship that I wish I had. I might not have had that failed experience of going to nursing school and then being like, holy shit, what am I gonna do with my life? Like, what's happening? And then, you know, like, I found a mentor that studied fish behavior, and I was like, you can get paid to just watch fish all day? Like, that's a job? And I wanna give other people that experience of having this like aha moment of like, I can get paid and have a career in something that I just genuinely enjoy. And so I really like, again, working with all kinds of people that are as excited as I am just about fish, and then we can figure it out from there.
One, I think there's just a new cohort of people coming to research social license and aquaculture. It's sort of an expanding segment of the research community. So that's great, just more people to work with. And two, I'm going to be the guy that mentions AI. Qualitative work is really time consuming, and having more tools to look at, you know, transcripts from public meetings or interviews, that can save us a lot of time. And I'm really excited to see what we can do there. I don't know if I'll ever get to do that, like before I finish my PhD, but that could be a really big deal for understanding what the public is thinking about aquaculture.
You'll get to say to your students, when I was in grad school, I had to do that by hand.
Exactly. On a chalkboard.
Yeah.
I think what excites me the most is that I get to work with new and emerging scientists. I get to work with young graduate students and PhD students and undergrads that are really excited and work. And now they're like working really hard. And I'm like, wow, I don't want to work that hard anymore.
That's a tough question. I'm usually, my brain's in the weeds when it comes to the biology and stuff. The new building we're building, the SAWIC, so having a whole lot of more capabilities for experimental design and flow-through systems, and really digging into aspects of RAS that are coming up. And what's really exciting is that Maine is like perched on the kind of forefront of not just RAS, but kind of all aquaculture, and all the satellite industries are all kind of waiting for things to get going. And so it really has this kind of feel where an industry is just starting, and to be at the forefront of that is really exciting.
I'm just excited to be here, honestly. The Aquaculture Research Institute is really a great place to work. Lots of great people here. I joined about 2.5 years ago, and I just have like a playground to pursue all of my dream projects now, and they're going pretty okay sometimes, so, you know.
Stinking up the second floor a bit, but
yeah, no.
It's stinky work.
Little territory heat. Who's making what smell?
I'm on the third floor. It's all right.
Being at the end here, I think I would just add bringing in new disciplines to the aquaculture field, working with, you know, new people who had no idea that aquaculture even existed, and also, you know, the work I'm doing with biopolymer materials and how we can replace plastics or reduce microplastics or look at new adjuvants for fish that can reduce adverse effects, and just, you know, seeing the growth and the movement forward, because we really are moving the needle.
In closing, our panelists shared some of their favorite projects, exemplifying the impactful research taking place at ARI.
I enjoy most all of the projects that we work on. Most all of them I find really interesting and exciting and fascinating. But I have to say, one of my favorites is not necessarily a project. It's seeing, you know, the students come in who are majoring in neurobiology and have no direction as to where they want to go, and being introduced to microbiology and histology and how that relates to aquaculture, and being excited about, you know, oh, I didn't even know this existed, and this is fascinating, and I want to take this in this direction. That to me is my favorite part, I think.
Well, I guess I'm really excited about some recent progress we've made with some micro capsules, applying shells using pretty unique technology to them. And I don't know if, you know, it's so early in the work that we don't know if this is going to be like the thing, but I'm excited about it right now. And I was told by a wise old guy, Fred Conte, before he passed, as an aquaculture guy, he said, be excited about the good things while you can, because there are, you know, you'll go through ups and downs, and so take that moment, and I just appreciate this early success.
But I mean, I guess you could categorize it between a project that before, during, and after. I mean, that I could answer that in three different ways almost. Currently, I think the project we're working on right now regarding getting this whole plethora of data on these cohorts is pretty exciting. But that may just be because I haven't really dug into the data and seen what it says. And so the possibilities are endless, right? But yeah, just having the opportunity to kind of forge your own questions and come up following the data has been super helpful and super exciting. And yeah, I've enjoyed every minute. Most every minute.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's my favorite project is the one that ends successfully. But it's that we now have state-of-the-art containment facilities that we can work very effectively and efficiently with exotic pathogens and exotic species, you know, and it's booked out for the next 2 years and we need more space. That in itself, that struggle is the definition of success.
I remember when I used to have to worry about my job when I was a technician in Debbie's lab and Sarah too. So yeah. I think we went from like, we're still working next week, right? To like, no more work, Debbie.
So I've mentioned some qualitative work, some quantitative work, but I also do a little bit of spatial work and I try to rope in what we learn from these qualitative and quantitative projects about public perception of RAS into site selection. So I have to use spatial tools to do that. And there's some things that we found out that are really interesting. Obviously, RAS development occurs in a place and in a community, and so communities have identities, and it has to fit. So that's kind of what I'm looking for, places where it fits. And I'm intrigued by this idea of restorative RAS. We talk about restoration aquaculture, but RAS can be restorative too. The built environment is part of our ecology as well. So there are places like paper mills in Maine that's been the subject of RAS proposals in California. I think somebody even proposed doing RAS in like a mine in West Virginia at some point.
Yep, they did.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on with that. But
I'm getting the sense you're like technology is part of like nature.
Absolutely, absolutely. Everything, I mean, a paper mill has a huge ecological footprint. So to the extent that RAS can rehabilitate a place like that and restore it, and then also, because of that, fit better into a community, that's something we should be looking for. And so I'm excited about doing that analysis. It's really hard to do spatial analysis with like social data because it's just not spatially explicit in the way that like a tree is. Because you take your ideas to your work, you take it to, you know, your job. But I'm trying to untangle that and work with that a little bit.
Plus, RAS is how we're going to, like, make fish on spaceships when we're traveling through the galaxies. So,
I hope there's a percentage of our population that goes to space. I'm happy to talk about which percentage. I think for me, you know, one of the things I'm really excited about is working with this program called Mano a Mano, and it's Spanish for hand in hand. And that program really addresses needs of immigrant communities in Maine. And we just started working with kids in that community and teaching them about aquaponic systems, land-based systems, how to care for fish. And I think for me and my own sort of decolonization process, I've thought a lot about how extractive my science has been and how I've gone to Mexico in these communities and taken animals from them but haven't given back to those communities where I've worked before. And so now I'm getting to work with kids that I'm hoping I get to teach them something, but I'm also hoping they will teach me Spanish so that, you know, we can start translating some of the resources that we have for youth and that you know, colleagues and friends that I have that work in Mexico, they can start bringing some of the work that we're doing. And even nationally in the U.S., like Spanish as a language is moving up, right? And so how do we make our educational experiences, again, accessible to those that speak different languages?
Wrapping up our panel, I wanted to give a quick thanks to all of the panelists for showcasing what great work ARI does. And also thanks to those of you that attended the panel live at WAS.
Sorry.
Nothing from you guys.